One of the biggest productivity hurdles is losing your data. Your computer crashes, you haven't backed stuff up, you've been meaning to, but you just never got around to it. That's where CrashPlan comes in. CrashPlan has been around since 2001, and they're a pioneer provider of cloud-based data protection and recovery services, both to individuals and businesses. And I guess ultimately, you've got to ask yourself, how much are your ideas worth, especially when you lose them? Whether it's a business plan, your images, your spreadsheets, your audio files, any of the files you use to work or manage your home. They've got options for everyone from solo creators to growing businesses. CrashPlan works efficiently in the background while you work, encrypting and sending all your new or changed files to their secure cloud every 15 minutes. And then if something happens to your files, your hard drive crashes, your cat knocks over a cup of coffee onto your laptop, or you just accidentally delete a file, your files are just a click away. CrashPlan makes it simple to restore some or all of your data with unlimited version retention. CrashPlan is your ultimate rewind button. Don't let data disasters slow you down. CrashPlan has your back and keeps you moving. Go to crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. That's crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year. Back up better with CrashPlan. And welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm thrilled to share a conversation I had with Jay Acunzo. He's someone whose podcasting work I've admired for a while. But not only that, he's a great thinker and speaker, and he's got a brand new book that I've been dying to get my hands on for a while called Break the Wheel, Question Best Practices, Hone Your Intuition, and Do Your Best Work. And doing your best work is something that this show has been all about since the beginning. And so to go back to the first two pieces of that subtitle, questioning your best practices, honing your intuition, those are the things that we are going to talk about in this episode. We're going to talk about what best practices are. We're going to talk about how there's a status quo when it comes to, quote, best practices, as well as how to question them, even use some of them, but then also use some of them and flip them or do the opposite of them to your benefit, as well as honing your intuition, knowing what intuition actually is, honing it, and ultimately, as Jay says in this conversation, learn the skill and the art of mastering decision-making. This is a huge part of productivity. Mastering decision-making, knowing what to do, what next step to take, what actions to take, and even once you've taken actions, seeing whether something works or not, and then changing course or making new decisions. This is where the intuition comes in and honing it. So I know you're going to love this episode. I know that I did. I had a great time talking with Jay. So enjoy this conversation with Jay Acunzo. Well, this week, it is definitely my pleasure to bring to you and have a conversation with Jay Acunzo. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. It's always great to talk to a fellow nerd in the podcast space, by the way.
Yes, and I think we need to continue that conversation that we were having about podcasting at some point here, because I'm still digging into, I don't know, there's so much room. Like, it's funny, because every 2-3 years or so, somebody talks about it's now the glory days, or the glory days are gone, one or the other, regarding podcasting. And I'm like, really? Like, how many of these are we living through? You know, like, it's like when people say that phrase, it's the year of, and then they insert something and then they use it over and over again every year. And I'm like, so which year is it this year for which thing? You know, it drives me nuts.
Well, you know, I worked in venture capital for 3 years and in tech before that. And I had a saying for all these copycat companies that would pitch us for funding, where they'd be like, we're the Uber of X, right?
right.
And it was the analogy is, or the metaphor is, when the wave crashes and the tide goes back out. In other words, when the trend is gone and it's no longer, you know, good times in the podcast world or whatever the trend is, the people who are left are the ones who really dug in to the fundamentals. Like they were like really into it, like stuck in there, because they cared about what mattered most, not because they were riding a wave.
Yeah, exactly. They were the hardcore, like they got it. They're in it for the craft of the thing, not the novelty of the thing.
Right. You're not launching a podcast because that's what people are doing now. You launched a podcast because you're either trying to self-express, and so this is for you, or because you have a real strategy behind it for your audience.
Yeah, exactly. And so inadvertently, I've just transitioned us into literally the topic of your brand new book, which has a lot to do with questioning these best practices. In fact, let's talk about what the title is, because the title is interesting in and of itself. It's called Break the Wheel, Question Best Practices, Hone Your Intuition, and Do Your Best Work. And that last part, do your best work, is what this show is all about in various forms when it comes to productivity, when it comes to all the different things that add up into productivity. This conversation, I assume, is going to be a lot more about strategy and kind of zigging and zagging instead of what everybody else is doing or what is assumed everybody should be doing. So that's why I really wanted to talk to you about this book. But we'll definitely talk about honing your intuition, because I definitely want to go there. And we're going to start with the whole questioning best practices thing. But when I hear the term break the wheel, two different phrases come to mind. The if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and reinventing the wheel. Was that intentional?
So I love that you went there, because so I could definitely reason why both of those could apply, but it's actually from Game of Thrones. So
see, and I'm not a Game of Thrones person.
All right. Well, let me give you for people who aren't, number one, congratulations on having a way more productive life.
Thank you.
To the theme of this show, way more productive life than people like me that binge it. And I binged it twice because my wife caught up five seasons late. So yeah. So, but here is the analogy. So in that show, Daenerys Targaryen is the mother of dragons, and she's going to fly over this ocean with her dragons and save the kingdom of Westeros from all these ruling class families. And they just keep warring for the throne. And she says that each of these families are just spokes on a wheel. First one is on top, then another, and on the wheel spins. And she says, to fix this problem, she's not going to stop the wheel. She's going to, and fellow nerds have already finished this phrase, she's going to break the wheel. Now, Eric, we don't live in the fictional world of Westeros, which is a really, really good thing, because it's very murdery there. But we have our own version of this wheel facing us at work every day. Whether we're an individual creator like me, whether you work in-house for a large corporation or a small corporation, whether you're in services or you're selling a product, whatever you're doing for work, you face your own version of this wheel, because we live in this era full of best practices and conventional thinking and trendy new tactics. And each of those are just spokes on a wheel. You know, one is on top, then another, and it just keeps spinning. And so we don't have to find a way to succeed on that wheel, clinging to a convention or glomming onto a trend or reaching out to every new thing that comes up. We have to break that wheel and think for ourselves, because the point isn't to find best practices. The point is to find the best approach for you. And we've never really been taught how to do that, nor do we address that overtly enough in our work. So that's what I wanted to write this book about.
Very cool. So number one, you, for the first time ever, have gotten me interested in Game of Thrones, because the way that you described that actually made sense to me. I've always just been like, it's just some fantasy. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Lord of the Rings person through and through. So
yes.
But it just never struck me as something. It struck me as like super complicated and lots of, anyway, I'm not going to keep talking about it, but I have friends who love it. And I'm just like, I talk to them about it and they're like, yeah, this and this and this. And I'm like, okay, great. That's fine.
Honestly, man, I feel bad, because I think my job, whether I'm writing or speaking on stages or creating shows, and in this case with the book, my job is to communicate in such a way that complexity becomes simplicity.
Yes.
And easy to understand. So that I can only control that with my own work. So you're going to go over to Game of Thrones and be like, this is not as simple as Jay described it.
No. But the way that, but like you normally do, you cut right to the crux of something, which now it gives me an entry point in that whole breaking the wheel. And because I know who that character is and I kind of know something about that. And you describing the scenario of what her kind of goal is, like, I get it. Anyway, spending way too much time on this. but that's the point, is like, here's the thing. People get caught up, you know, like we were talking about, where it's the year of, you know, where then it's like, oh, well, then if it's the year of podcasting, for example, which I've heard for, I don't know how many, I think we're in the sixth or seventh year of the podcast now. If you've been in any of those years and you've heard that and said, okay, now I need to do a podcast, because everybody else is saying I need to do a podcast, then that's not a reason to do one. And, you know, and that, and again, that's one of the things that we call into question on this show time and again is when it comes to doing the right work and doing your best work, it's not about doing the same work as everybody else. It's about uniquely doing the stuff that you can only do. And so following the crowd isn't going to make sense in this scenario. So I like that you're bringing up this idea of questioning best practices, and you're not saying best practices are bad. In fact, I think what's sneaky, almost in a cool strategy kind of way, is look at what the best practices are that are out there. Then question those, because obviously they've worked for somebody at some point, but that doesn't mean they're going to work for you. But that doesn't mean that like flipping it on its head wouldn't work for you.
Right. It's not, I'm not saying throw out a best practice. Like, for example, what if you could set up a filter around your brain where if you had an idea, your boss had an idea, your team, your client, or an expert, and by expert, I could mean an individual you like to follow, a person you hear on a podcast, or the past precedent of, you know, the expertise bottled up in your industry or company or job function. If you had this like filter wrapped around yourself and your team where you could easily vet which of those things make sense and to what degree in your unique situation, like you would make better decisions faster and you would be basing all of your decisions not on the trend, not on the conventional wisdom, but on whatever works best for you. Because here's the thing, that's actually what matters in our work. And we've gotten so far away from starting with our own context because it's so easy to just glom onto a trend or find a list of tips and tricks or, you know, it's like going to the eye doctor. You know, what we're doing if we go to the eye doctor, if we act like we normally do it in business, is we're just like, what is everybody else getting for their prescription and their frames? I'll get that too. Whereas what we should be able to do is like hold one of those best practices up or hold one of our own ideas up and be like, number one or number two, number three or number four, like which of these things make the most possible sense for me? And even if nobody has selected that option, even if you're taking an unconventional path, if you know it works for your team and your audience and your customers and the resources that you're faced with every day, that's great. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter if you're doing something new or old or trendy or not trendy, or you're launching a podcast or you think print is more favorable, whatever. The path doesn't matter. What matters is you find the best path for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in my mind, I don't know, maybe this is a definition I can come up with here real quick, but a best practice is it's something that has worked for somebody at some point. But, you know, like we always talk about on this show, productivity is something that's personal. It's unique. It's, you know, it doesn't matter what apps or approaches somebody else is doing. You can take a look at what they're doing and say, sure, there may be some principles that apply universally or almost universally. But again, that doesn't mean that cookie cutter is going to work. It's not going to say, you know, you can't just say, okay, you know, I need this app and this notebook and this, you know, I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. and I'm good to go. Like, it's just not that simple. And that's, again, it's a good thing that's not that simple. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a show.
Right. We all want to do our best work, and then we turn to best practices and we think it'll lead to this nice, neat curve, like growing exponentially in terms of our productivity or results or fulfillment or speed. And then what it actually looks like is a line of progress that I would best describe with this song. Ready? And we just like keep swirling and thrashing and grabbing at every new thing. Like, you know, it's like, is it this one? Nope. What about this one? No. How about that one? Nope. Still not the best. And it's like, what we need to just get out of this endless cycle of all this stuff and start with a baseline understanding of our unique context. And that then provides the filter we need to really quickly and confidently, in other words, with clarity, make good decisions. So ultimately, this book is about how to make the best decision, not based on what works on average, not based on what works in general, but based on your unique situation. And by the way, as each situation changes, you can apply the same principles again and again that you can pull out from this book. So I want people to be basically like masters of decision making in order to do their best work.
That's a great way to put it. When you said Masters of Decision Making, my mind suddenly like flashed He-Man and Master of the Universe for some reason. Anyway, you know, and then he lifts up the sword and says, I have the power and then to make decisions. Anyway, sorry. ADHD kicking in there. One of the things then that kind of illustrates the fact that you're not saying throw out best practices is one of the common best practices for a book is to share stories in it that illustrate your point. And I, being a coffee lover, loved that you opened this up, and it really kind of helps me enter into this decision-making mastery process when you talk about Death Wish coffee.
Yes, I love this. I love this story. I love this brand, and it highlights the need to inform your decisions with the details of your own context first, best practices, trends, etc. second, if at all. So let me give the overview for people who are unfamiliar with this company, because it's worth knowing about. So here you have this company that promotes itself as the world's strongest coffee. And actually this year, and I was able to sneak this detail into the book because it happened during the manuscript process, they sent their coffee to the International Space Station. So they're not actually the world's strongest coffee. They joke that they're now the galaxy's strongest coffee. But it all started with this decision that from the outside looking in seemed crazy if you know the convention in coffee, and specifically what you should roast to create a great tasting brew. So Eric, are you familiar with the two most common types of coffee beans in the world?
Yes, and I knew this before I read the story in the book, but it's, and I hope I say this right, but it's Arabica and Robusta.
You got it. You nailed it. So Arabica is like 70% of the world's crop, and there's a reason for that. It's in demand. It's very, very common in North America in particular, because we drink coffee in what I'd call long drinks. Unlike in Italy, where maybe you walk up to a counter, stay standing, and shoot your espresso and leave.
Right.
We sit down. We like the exposed brick. You know, my millennial senses start tingling when I walk into a coffee shop, right? It's just like the culture we live in, especially people like us who are thinking about tech and productivity and social media, et cetera. So Arabica is it. It's the best practice because it's delicious. Robusta is really bitter, and it's very, very potent, and it's really difficult to make a drink that tastes good, at least in terms of if your good means artisanal and floral and chocolatey, aka Arabica. So Mike Brown is the founder of Death Wish Coffee, but first he'd started this little rinky-dink coffee shop in Saratoga Springs, New York, and he was struggling. He was doing everything in his power to tank the business. He was just grabbing at every trend and trying everything people said was a best practice. And all the research he did to fix this business pointed to the same fatal flaw, which was he was roasting Robusta beans, and every expert was like, oh my God, no, you need to roast Arabica. And then one day this truck driver came into his shop. It was like one of his very few customers. And he said, Mike, what's the strongest cup of coffee you can give me? And the guy said something that I think Mike will never forget, which is he wanted a strong and dark roast. So Eric, do you drink coffee regularly?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what kind of roast? Dark, medium, light?
Usually light or medium.
Okay. You might know this then as a drinker of those blends. Lighter coffee is traditionally more powerful. It has more caffeine. And we don't realize that because it's light, right? But it's light roast in that it hasn't been roasted as long. And that means it's retained more of its caffeine than if it was roasted to become darker. So Mike is like, all my research says I can't give you a dark and strong roast at the same time, Mr. Truck Driver. And so he like did his best, poured a cup of coffee, and the guy left. And he kept hearing this request, strong and dark, over and over again. And he realized, well, these people are truck drivers and construction workers and blue collar workers. They're working at the racetracks in Saratoga Springs. And he's like, well, they're not looking for coffee to be artisanal or like a sit down experience. They're working insanely hard. In other words, they don't want more caffeine, they want the ability to work themselves to death, right? So that's exactly what he started to sell. He switched from this best practice, Arabica, and chose with total clarity, in logical fashion, something that seemed crazy to others. I'm going to roast Robusta because it loses less caffeine. It starts with more caffeine content. In fact, an average cup of Robusta has 83% more caffeine than an average cup of Arabica. And so he built this like radical product in the minds of the experts, but to him it was strategic and logical. And the difference is he focused on his context first, these customers and what they wanted in his situation. And the best practice actually did not apply, even though arguably it was the most common best practice. And suddenly this little shop that he was struggling to build became Death Wish Coffee and this massive global brand. And they've run Super Bowl ads and they're all over social media with almost a million followers across channels. And people just adore this brand and they look like rebels. And it seems like he did something nuts. But it's only crazy from the outside looking in until you understand his context. So my thesis, Eric, is that if we focus more of our time and effort and decision making on our context, in other words, the unique and firsthand information of our situation, we will make better decisions than any best practice or generality can provide.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, it's that unique. And I think you even refer to it this way at some other places or definitely in your newsletter where you talk about having this unfair advantage. His unfair advantage was he realized his audience was not going to come to him for something that tasted good and was a sit down, sip it and enjoy it type of coffee, which again is the best practice. It's the mass media. It's the, you know, commonplace. Again, it's the normal, it's status quo. In other words,
it's status quo. 100%. Yes. It's status quo.
And they needed a, for their lifestyle, they needed a caffeine delivery system and that was it. And so he could lean into that and do something that was contrary to the best practice and totally buck the system.
And what's amazing is, you know, not only does it affect the product, that one decision, that insight about the customer, you know, the unfair advantage, it affects their marketing. Their logo is like jet black and blood red. It's not all these like flowery colors and, you know, parchment paper and papyrus fonts of most coffee shops, right? It's dark, it's aggressive. Their social media, they on Instagram, they share motivational quotes like any other brand, but even in that one specific instance, they break from the norm because they do anti-motivational quotes. Like one of my favorites is, "Have you ever stopped to consider that maybe coffee is addicted to me?" Or if I gave up coffee, I'd have to take up murder. Like that's what they do. And it's because they're not just trying to be rebels without a cause. They're rebels if you know the status quo only, or if you don't know their context. But in their situation, everything they're doing is strategic, logical, even safe. And so all the stories in the book, whether it's Death Wish Coffee or Starbucks, solo creators or startups, these companies, these individuals do work that seems crazy. It all stems from my podcast called Unthinkable, actually. All those stories, just like the book, are stories of work that seems crazy until you understand their specific context. That's always the difference. And I think it should be the difference in how we make good decisions or bad ones. We should start with our context first. And the book proposes how to go about doing that.
So this idea of mastering decision making, starting with questioning the best practices, but then moving into this idea of honing your intuition. And for a lot of people, the word intuition is kind of a vague term.
Yeah.
What is your definition of what intuition is?
It's not my definition. It's the definition. And we go through a brief jaunt through history to see how this term has become twisted and repurposed or rejected. But if you go back to its root, like the root of the word in Latin is intuere, which just means to consider. And there's another interpretation from late Middle English, which is intuit, which means to contemplate. So follow me through this logic. If we want to do our best work and usually turn to best practices, but best practices don't take into account details in our context, what do we have to get better at doing? Considering our context. And the skill that we have, that we all actually possess to consider our environment is called intuition, but we ignore it. And that's a mistake because if you look at the actual research psychology, the science, not like Greek poetry and looking for the muse, but you actually look at the science, which I do in the book, intuition is this very real and practical skill set we have. It's just that we push it aside, or we look at the people who have already mastered the skill and we're like, it seems instant and magical and subconscious to them, so we can't do that. But really, we can hone that skill to consider our environment, in other words, hone our intuition, with one very simple change. Instead of obsessing over everybody else's right answers, we need to ask better questions. And if we can ask better questions, Eric, all of a sudden we stop looking like experts who care about absolutes or theory, and we start to prioritize evidence. And evidence is all that really matters. If you want to be more productive in your day, should you care about inbox zero? I don't know. I don't have enough evidence about your life to say yes or no. If I say yes, then I'm saying it based on my evidence from my life, but we're not the same. The subtle differences between you and me make all the difference in the world. And the only way to root those out is to ask better questions. So what is intuition? Honestly, it's the process of considering your environment. And that might start slowly and proactively by strategically asking better questions, six of which I propose in the book. But it also might become instant the more and more you do that, because it becomes like muscle memory. It just becomes how you operate.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match with them, thanks to Indeed. With Indeed, you can ditch that busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, making their matching engine your go-to because it's constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. I used to be involved giving my input into the hiring process for a few key roles that were connected to mine. And man, do I wish we had Indeed back then, because we could have gotten much higher quality hires using Indeed. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility on Indeed.com at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
According to the CDC, 74% of the U.S. is overweight. That is a staggering number, and it means that the majority of adults, like myself, need to lose weight to improve our metabolic health. The good news is Prolon can help. Prolon is fasting with food. That's right, it's fasting, but it's with food. And it all starts with Prolon's 5-day program. Snacks, soups, and beverages are all designed to activate your body's fasting state, and it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. With Prolon, you get everything you need, prepackaged, ready to go. Every order of Prolon's 5-day program comes with 5 boxes labeled by day, so you know what to eat each day. Prolon is science-backed nutrition that helps support blood sugar levels and cardiovascular health, and change your relationship with food in just 5 days. I've had experience with fasting myself, both intermittent and otherwise, and Prolon makes it so much easier. It's not a diet, it's science. Science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. Right now, Prolon is offering Beyond the To-Do List listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/beyond. That's prolonlife.com/beyond for this special offer. That's prolonlife.com/beyond.
What's something that works so well, it basically feels like magic? For me, I'm thinking air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, definitely. Meeting-free Fridays? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your own shop stage to the first real store stage, you don't have to just sell your own stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from brands you love and give your customers more variety and your business more sales. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify also helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyond. Again, go to shopify.com/beyond now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/beyond.
One of the ways I think that you kind of are portraying questioning best practices is secretly and subtly, you're really saying, hey, ask better questions.
100%. The thing that I think we misconstrue, like when I say somebody thinks for themselves, we think of a genius like Albert Einstein or a rebel, Johnny Cash, or what we view as Death Wish Coffee. We think of an inspiring voice like Maya Angelou, or maybe we think of like that weirdo who makes like who paints frogs on reclaimed wooden tables in some weird part of town, like that, that, you know, that old career path, Eric. Like we think of all these radicalized people when we think that somebody thinks for themselves. But thinking for yourself is very practical. It's a necessary thing to do if we're going to do our best work. And the change is rather simple. It's just stop obsessing and starting your process with someone else's answer. Start by asking better questions. And then in the book, we go through this journey to be like, okay, so what are we asking the questions about in our lives, in our environment? What are the types of questions we can ask? And I talk about two. And then I propose six specific questions and encourage others to come up with their own. And it, in doing so, we set up this like instant clarity generator, right? It's like if you ask these questions, if you know the answers alone or with your teams, you set up that filter I talked about at the top of the show, right? It's your intuition at work. It's like, well, I understand my context. I've considered my environment. So now all those best practices, they stop looking like answers and start looking like possibilities. And I can very quickly vet those possibilities in my situation.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I love that. Again, you're not just saying, you know, buck the system, throw out the old way, it's time for the new way. Because again, that's really what everybody who's going with the flavor of the month is doing. It's actually a way to circumvent that. And like you said, it's breaking the wheel. Now that I understand what the reference means, I get it even more. So it's doing away with the whole cycle and system of being stuck on, you know, like you said, each spoke coming up and being the next one. It's not about what the next one is. It's about what the right one is for you. And for a lot of us, that's stepping outside of the whole system completely, though not completely ignoring the past. We have to look at, you know, I mean, this is one of the things that I really kind of admired. It's one of the few things I did admire, you know, a lot about, for example, Steve Jobs, is he didn't ignore what everybody else was doing, but he decided that he was going to do his own thing. I mean, he's one of the ones where I think of when you talk about the whole, like, you know, he's not the guy over in the corner or in the town painting frogs. He's the guy who's super successful, but he's doing the exact same thing. He's doing his own thing. He just has, you know, this incredible amount of resource and, you know, design team behind him.
I talk about first principle thinking a lot in the book. In other words, if you can actually reach the fundamental why behind something, you know, a really good example is the Death Wish example. The customer didn't want stronger coffee. They didn't want more caffeine. They didn't really even want more energy. They wanted the ability to work insanely hard, perhaps even work themselves metaphorically to death.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what Mike addresses and the Death Wish team addresses in their marketing, in their product, everything, in the brand they chose. And built. And it's not because they're just bucking the trend for the sake of it. The reason they have bucked the trend is they followed this evidence in their context that took them away from the trend. Some other bits of evidence might actually steer into the expert advice. And actually, Mike did that too. So before he launched Death Wish, he was selling, and this is crazy, 25 types of coffee and like different blends. Mm-hmm. And then this is truly nuts, 200 types of candy at a single location, brick and mortar coffee shop, 200 types of candy. And when he started to try and build the world's strongest coffee, the experts he reached said, you got to stop selling all those different types of products. You're like, it's overwhelming your inventory and you're spending too much money on the marketing and it's just not going to work. And then he went back home and he said, you know what, actually that expert advice does make sense because in my context, I'm trying to create the world's strongest coffee. So I know my aspiration. So that means, yeah, actually this approach given to me by an expert, I will say yes to, even while he said no to Arabica, which was another best practice. So again, I'm not saying be a rebel for rebellion's sake. I'm saying start with what's right in front of you. Act like an investigator instead of an expert. And the details of your own environment will necessarily lead you forward. And who cares if that forward means going with the trend or against it, as long as it works for you.
I love the other part, though, that comes after that is once he's scaled back and once he kind of knows what he's honing in onto, that he's selling like one bag of coffee a month. And then
what I love about that is
slowly from there.
Yeah. He stopped looking for results and started looking for signal of results. And he did that with something I thought was really genius, which was, and actually this is not unique to Mike, it seems to be a trend in the book, which is when you start looking for signal of results, instead of looking for metrics like a big top line number that says, okay, this test worked better than the norm, implement the rest of it. He looked for a small number of people reacting in a big emotional way. And we overlook that in our work way too often, whether we're being self-reflecting and we're like, I implemented this new approach for my workflow and I feel really happy at work. We overlook that. We look at the output, the number of projects, the number of things we ship, whatever, the hours that feel more efficient. We undervalue the emotional response that either we have to our own work or that our audience has to our work in favor of this like big top line passive number. But it turns out if you start with resonance, if you start with that visceral reaction or what I call in the book, true believers, slowly by slowly, you can like test your way in the right direction for you. And this is particularly important if you identify that the path you're taking has no precedent, has no case study, is not the best practice or norm. So with Mike, he stopped looking for success and started making learning the goal, and he got greater success.
Yeah, see, and so he was following, first off, he, by getting rid of stuff and then, moving down the path that you were talking about just then, he's honing his intuition bit by bit. His intuition is becoming, again, a stronger bicep muscle, so to speak, in his mind.
Right. What it has to do with is I part of the book explores the psychological barriers to making good decisions that try, and I try to explain, why do we so commonly make decisions by either looking at the conventional wisdom or jumping onto the new trend, or many of us, even though we might not admit it, we make decisions by thrashing, right? We just decide we're going to do everything and anything. In marketing, we're going to be on Twitter. We're also going to be on Snapchat because our boss emailed us in a panic. Hey, what's our Snapchat strategy? And I have no idea. But then Instagram gets bought by Facebook and they start copying Snapchat. So we're also going to be on Instagram. But then email marketing is so crucial. And then here comes voice. And it's like, hey, Alexa, please punch me in the face. There are real psychological reasons that we behave that way. It's not just, but my boss, but my resources, because that's how we do things around here. You can find the reason we do the things we're doing because that's how we do things around here. You know what I mean? Like, and so in the book, we go through the psychological traits that we exhibit. And if you can diagnose the illness, so to speak, it's a lot easier to then build back up a solution that addresses the illness instead of a symptom. And so when we talk about making good decisions, when we talk about trusting our intuition or following details from our context, we're doing so as a remedy for what plagues us at work. We make decisions a certain way, and we have to break that pattern to become those consummate investigators instead. It sounds so hard because we're using phrases like intuition, investigator, expert, best practices. But really, it's like you said, the muscle memory, it starts slowly. It's asking better questions, and it's most importantly, pointing those questions at the right elements of your context, which I'm happy to go into. But that is key, is not just like, I'm going to question everything. No, it's strategically asking really good questions, open-ended questions that prompt an investigation or a test into the elements of your situation.
Yeah. And I really like that because, most of us who've been in, the online business world / marketing world, we hear all of this, we hear about, for example, there's a thing that's thrown around a lot that's called, don't trust vanity metrics. And that's easy. That's simple. That makes sense. That's a first step towards starting to dig down deeper into things, and for people that don't know.
But hold on though, like vanity metrics, like views and shares, and even to a certain extent, like blog subscribers or podcast subscribers, I agree. Like if don't trust vanity metrics, the implication there is if you're trying to drive revenue, right? They're like, that's a proxy for revenue and it's distant. There's a lot of things in between. But hold on, like saying don't trust vanity metrics is in and of itself a generality. And so, it's like my dad likes to say all statements are generalities, including this one.
Yes.
Get more specific. If you're selling software, maybe don't obsess over vanity metrics, but like, you can look at them. Look at them as a signal. Look at when I launch a podcast episode, if I get 12 emotional emails, about like why it was such a great story, that's a vanity metric, really. But I'm using that as signal. It's like if you're looking for treasure on the beach and you get that little beep with your metal detector, you're not there on the beach to find beeps, but the beep is a signal you should invest more in that spot. So this is like a nuanced approach to decision making in this frenetic world, which we're, you know, whether it's the news cycle or the decisions at work, we've kind of lost the ability to grasp nuance. And so what I'm trying to do is let's instill some of that back in the way we make decisions. The goal isn't to glom on to somebody's pithy statement or a best practice. The goal is to do what works best for you. That's a really nuanced way to operate, but we can get good at that as a repetitive motion, as a way we operate instead of how we usually make decisions.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, and I'm glad you cut me off then, because I, you know, again, one of those things, it you get so used to hearing the same things over and over again that you start to think that even some of those very simple, just swatting away of certain ideas to funnel you away over into something else. Like, you know, again, the don't trust vanity metrics thing is usually as set up to say, look at the data. Well, a vanity metric, stuff that gets lumped into that, is also data.
Right. So, so this is a great example of where we can start to ask the two types of questions that I illuminate in the book. So they work in tandem. There's something called a trigger question and then a confirmation question. So if we're going to ask better questions in our context and we're going to act like investigators, there are two types of questions we can ask. So a trigger question is an open-ended question about your environment that the only way to answer this is through reflection or testing. You know, a really simple example is why. But you can't Google the answer, right? So here's an example, vanity metrics. Well, why shouldn't we trust vanity metrics as, let's say, a podcaster, Eric? Downloads are actually a vanity metric. Why are downloads a poor and a vanity metric? Because it just means the file was taken offline. It doesn't mean people listen to it.
Yeah, it's not a list. So, it means somebody bought it. It doesn't mean they actually didn't just return it right back to the store.
Right. So good analogy. So our goal isn't to get people to download the file. Our goal is to get people to listen, right? Well, why are listens, if you can measure it, a vanity metric? Well, because what's a listen? Is it 3 seconds? Is it 3 minutes? Like, it's kind of squishy. Nobody really knows. Like, what you really want is for people to complete the episode, or at least to have a good experience through however many minutes they complete. So, okay, well, now here's another vanity metric. It's not downloads. It's the emotional response of a small number of people. Also a vanity metric. So should I write off vanity metrics? Maybe I should write off downloads. But the other vanity metric of emotional responses I get about my podcast, that actually might be a better, quote, vanity metric, because it's a better signal than downloads of what we really want, which is actual listens. It's really hard to get somebody to respond in a few paragraphs telling you why they like the episode when they haven't actually listened to the episode, right?
Right.
But if you're just looking at downloads, that could be the case. So a trigger question is why? And then the confirmation question is, well, how do we know? Right. And so what I do in the book is I propose three pairs of trigger questions and confirmation questions. Confirmation questions just ensure that you're on the right path, that your investigation has actually pulled out evidence. So trigger questions launch your investigation. They're open-ended. They require you to start asking questions and reflect and test, while a confirmation question is saying, how do we know? Did we ensure we actually picked up real evidence? And so if you use those two types of questions in tandem, all of a sudden you start to chip away at any answer you're handed. By the way, that includes answers that I give away in the book, because what I challenge people to do is question everything.
Yes.
And know the right places to question these things and not trust other people blindly.
I love that. And especially the fact that you do that in your own book is like, wait, hey, you don't have to trust me. It's the whole LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow, if you're familiar with it. You don't have to take my word for it.
I love that we've mentioned Game of Thrones.
I know.
We've mentioned He-Man. We mentioned LeVar Burton. This is the nerdiest and most wonderful interview ever.
You can tell that I myself am a child of the 80s, where of course the what you call it doesn't fit in that, the Game of Thrones. But sure. Yeah, man, this is one of those things that's it's hard for people to get their head around, because it's not some easy, quick fix, like, principle to just say, oh, okay, I get it. Question, you know, they will, a lot of people will hear what we're talking about and they will say, oh, okay, I need to question everything. And that's not what you're saying, but that's, on the surface level what people will hear. This is much more of a shift slash, not even a shift. It's kind of I'm trying to think of what the right metaphor would be. It's almost a recalibrating and I guess the word is honing. You've got that in the title. Honing really is it. It's turning away from the old way of doing things in some senses. But then it is turning towards the new path and then honing your way down that way into mastery, especially of this decision-making process. And I mean, this is one of those things where, I mean, I probably need to reread the book now that I've had the conversation with you, because I think that I got most of it, but there's a whole other level of, quote, getting it that could be gotten. Jeez, that's
I love that. That was such a you stuck the landing, the verbal gymnast move that you just pulled off.
Thanks. So, you know, this is one of those things. I mean, I really think that, gosh, if you're a person who really wants to learn to hone your thinking skills, but specifically your decision-making skills, because again, when it comes to specifically productivity, which again, that's what we've been talking about this whole time, really. It's just, there are a lot of different definitions for what productivity is, but really it's about getting the results that you ultimately want out of life and out of your business, et cetera. And it takes all these different turns and all these different aspects to it working in tandem to make something come out that way. And this is an overarching approach that if you were to take it, it could change the way that you're really looking at everything. I mean, this could change the way that you look at how you're doing your email or how you're doing your social media strategy or how you are doing your health. In other words, this applies to so many different things.
Well, what if you could make better decisions faster? That's a core question I asked before writing this book. The other question I asked, or the other kind of impetus to write the book, is there is plenty of advice, plenty of insight, plenty of courses and modules and whatever to get you from 0 to 5, to get you right at average, like best practices, expertise, how to do the thing. That is now table stakes because you can access it in a blink of an eye, and more pours out onto the internet every day. So how do you go from 5 to 10? How do you push beyond the average and the status quo and the commodity work and actually do something exceptional? And so if you're content to be like, you know what, just hand me the answer, I want this thing to be done, then this book might not be for you. Or this book is for other choices you're making where, you know, I like to say some people, sometimes you just need directions. Just like, here's the step-by-step from getting to where you are to where you want to travel to. Sometimes you need a map. You're like, I don't know where we're going to go exactly, but I'd like to see all the different options. What this book is a compass, right? It's like, let's set your true north. Let me show you how the compass works. And then in any scenario you enter, you're going to be able to navigate it. And you're going to be able to do so with clarity and confidence. In other words, you're going to make the best decision for you, regardless of what everyone else says. And so, I think sometimes you need all three of those things. But I think the most fundamental, and I think the most transformative and the most powerful is, of course, the compass. And so that's what I'm trying to provide people is, you know, you're not going to find one simple secret. You're not going to find my 7-step plan. You're going to find 6 fundamental questions that you need to go and answer alone or with your team. But hopefully that gets you enough of the way there. That's like saying here's north, south, east, and west, that when you find what your version of those things are, what your answers to these 6 questions are, now you have this like decision-making operating system and you can start to make better decisions faster.
Dang, you're good. Jeez, like the directions, the map and the compass thing resonates really deeply with me. And you may have just helped me plot a path forward with just that example for this podcast in and of itself. So I owe you.
That's so nice to hear. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Jay, it's awesome talking with you. I mean, I really do think, this book may not be for everyone, but I think it really should be for everyone, unfortunately, whether they like it or not. It's brand new. I mean, it's just out.
October 1st, so it's out.
So it's out now. Yeah. So, okay. So I thought so. So the book is out now, and people can order it now. They can receive it now. I mean, they could instantly go grab it on like Kindle or whatever. But like, you know, is there any, you know, early bird? Like, I mean, there usually people do pre-orders. I know the book's out already, but is there any kind of like place where people can like go dig in more and find out if this book is for them?
Yes. So jayakunzo.com/book, you're going to find three things. You're going to find more context that just describes the book. And if you go to the blog link at the top, you'll also find a lot of writing pulled from the book. But also on that book page, you're going to find quotes and ideas from some of the better thinkers that I think I was able to reach and interview, including Mike Brown from Death Wish, but a lot of others across lots of sectors. And then, and we're on a show about productivity, I had the same routine to write the book, and most powerfully, I had this playlist that I've been building since college for doing deep work. And I was like, you know what? I listened to this every time I wrote the book. I actually published a link to the Spotify playlist and then built a second one that wasn't for deep work, but for motivation. So I put those playlists linked from the book site. So that's jayakunzo.com/book.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to go check those out and add those. Jay, it's been awesome talking with you. I'm going to have you back on the show at some point in the near future to maybe dive even deeper into this, maybe with some people's questions when it comes to this. So that would be awesome. Jay, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. And to people listening, I know how much it takes up your time to listen to an entire podcast episode. So as a podcaster myself, thank you for your attention and thanks for listening.
So my takeaway from this conversation with Jay is this is very much a hand in hand. This is very much a hand in hand conversation combination, even with the other Jay episode recently, Jay Bear and Jay Akunzo, two of my favorite business guys, to be honest. The strategy, the thought process, the mastering decision making, the analyzing, but being able to become quicker at making decisions and making the right decisions and even trial and error. All of this is something that I'm not necessarily going to have a quick, easy takeaway from, other than I'm going back through the books again, myself personally. So if you want to grab the book, you can go to beyondthetodolist.com/246. That's where you'll find the show notes for this episode and links to find out more about Jay, to connect with him, to check out his podcast, grab the book, dive deep into it, and master your decision making. And thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying this. I hope you got something great out of this episode. And I've got some great ones coming up, planning ahead for episode 250 coming up very soon. If you enjoyed this conversation, I'd love it if you'd hit share while you're over there on the show notes for this episode. And if this is your first episode, subscribe. We've got lots of stuff in the back catalog, lots of great stuff coming, and I will see you next episode.